We continue to ponder the profound stories from the book of Genesis. We're still here in the second chapter. These stories are inspired foundation passages about all of reality, our fundamental dependence on God, and the nature which God has bestowed on us and on all things. Well, yesterday we heard about God planting a garden, a beautiful garden, and then creating a creature to take care of the garden, the man, the human person. Today we get to the place where the Lord says it's not good for this person to be alone. And then he forms all these other creatures. Finally, he forms the woman out of the man, and the two of them are equals. They're both naked and they feel no shame. So it's a very basic story about the beginning of the human family. If you want to really understand this passage, there's no better source than St. John Paul II's series of teachings, which are now referred to as the Theology of the Body. John Paul, back, gosh, more than 40 years ago now, back in the early 80s, he gave a series of teachings, and a lot of the teachings were about this specific passage. John Paul recognized that the world was off balance, had lost its understanding of God's plan for the human person, for marriage and sexuality. The sexual revolution, even by the late 70s, had already created extraordinary chaos in the human family. Divorce rates, adultery, pornography, sexually transmitted diseases, homosexuality, all kinds of disorders related to sexuality. And so he said, well, we have to get this figured out in a way that the modern person can understand. So he gave this whole series of teachings. Now, we can't go into it all here, and in fact I myself probably don't even have a great grasp of it, but he started, or one of the starting points was to reflect on how God made man in the first place, the original condition. Before sin entered the picture, what is this creature man? How did God design him? What was his plan for him? And that's where this passage comes in, because this whole story, this first reading, is all before sin. So it's all in the perfection of the original condition. John Paul identifies three original states: original solitude, original unity, original nakedness. We won't go into all that, but if you've studied this, that might sound familiar to you, the original condition. Because what John Paul does is he looks at the original condition as we were created by God, then he looks at the condition of man in the fallen state, the condition we're in now, what he calls the historical man, and then looks at what we are destined to be in eternal life. What is the fulfillment of God's plan for the human person in the next life? It's kind of three stages. But here we're at the very beginning. Let's just look at this passage and pick out a few insights from it. First of all, God says it's not good for the man to be alone. Well, why not? What's wrong with being alone? It's not that it's not good to be alone, like we sit alone in a chapel, or we sit alone, or we work alone. It's not what he's talking about. He's talking about the fundamental condition of the human person. We are made for relationships. It's part of the kind of being that we are. So when he says it's not good for the man to be alone, he's not saying you have to be with somebody all the time, but we have to be in relationship. Otherwise, we can't really be ourselves. We can't know ourselves or be who we're called to be. Relationships. Now, we have to set aside some of the superficial interpretations of this passage. I'm sure you've run into them. Some people kind of treat this in a childish way, as if, you know, God tried to figure out what this creature needed, and so he made all these animals, as if he was thinking that the animals would be suitable partners. That's what it says, but that can't be what God had in mind. So yeah, that's a superficial way of reading it. It's not as if God said, oh, I made one of these, now how can I make another one? That's what it looks like. And then the idea that God made the animals and then presented them to the man. Well, what this shows, and this came out in the first creation story as well, there's a fundamental difference between the human person and all the other creatures. Fundamental difference. In the first creation story, all the animals are made first, and then man, male and female, made in the image of God, is placed at the top of the hierarchy of creatures. That's clear. In this version, man was made first. He's there to be the gardener, and God gives him all these animals, the great variety of animals. What we can see here is that animals are good, and they are good for us. I think we know this, although we might take it to one extreme or another, but it's a good thing to live in a world full of animals. Animals can be a source of comfort. They can do a lot of work. They can teach us a lot. And so in throughout history, I mean, there's been a long standing relationship between the human person, human family, and animals, whether for work or for food or for companionship. That's all fine. Of course, now it can get out of hand. People who are concerned about the degradation of the environment say animals don't break down the world. The human family is the problem. We should have fewer people. If you want to really save the environment, don't have any children. A lot of people have said that, and they're serious. They actually think that it's bad to be a human person in the world because it's bad for the environment. That's a kind of insanity. But then the other extreme is to make animals equivalent to human person. You know, people who think of their pets as their children or as their members of their family. No, it's nice to have pets. I mean, that's very great to have that kind of comfort. And God, that's why God gave us animals. But they're not the same as we are. The man here in the story knows immediately that none of these is the same as he is. And God knows it, of course. So God takes this next step. Now, this is symbolic language. We have to understand what's being revealed here. He casts the man into a deep sleep. It's a kind of death. And takes out one of the ribs and makes up out of that rib a woman. Again, we have to get past the superficial interpretations of this. There has been a long-standing tradition that meant that the woman was somehow less than the man, that the woman was just better than an animal, but not as good as a man, second-class citizen. That's not what the passage means. It's not that the woman is an imperfect man, just a piece. On the other hand, it doesn't mean that the woman who, okay, this is what the feminists say, the man was made out of dirt and the woman was made out of human flesh. So which one's better? Obviously the woman is more noble because made out of something better. But those miss the point altogether. The point is that the man and the woman are the same. They are of the same stuff. They have equal dignity. They are made for each other. And the man recognizes it right away. This one, unlike any other creature I have ever seen, this one is the same as I am. Bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. This is someone with whom I can have an equal relationship. I can meet face to face. And that's what we need. We need human persons to be able to relate to. Most fundamentally, men, women need each other. We need this complementary, mutual relationship. It's the very basis of the whole human family. And this is what's being revealed here. It's good. It's good that there is such a thing as a male-female couple. And it's unique in creation. All the animals, especially the higher animals, all have male-female polarity. And that's part of the reproductive process. But God doesn't say it's not good for a dog to be alone or it's not good for a horse to be alone. And whether it's a male dog or a female dog, a male horse or a female horse, you have pretty much what a horse is, or a dog, or a cat. But when you have the human person, if you only have one, the man, or only have the woman, you have something incomplete. You don't have the whole story of what it means to be a human person, because a human person has to be in relationship. And so you need two. Part of this goes back to what it means to be created in the image of God. God, who is one, God who is alone, you could say, certainly before creation, he was alone, and yet he is three. He is in a relationship with himself. So if we're made in the image of God, then we have a relationship with ourselves. We have a consciousness which no other creature, no physical creature has. We have a self-awareness, and we have the capacity to be able to establish relationship with others, which no other creature has. So this is part of being an image of God. What the language of John Paul is that we are able to establish a communion of persons. A communion of persons, which is a reflection of God, who is a communion of persons. That's why it's so important to uphold every legitimate communion of persons. First of all, marriage and the family, which is built on marriage. But then any community that reflects the Trinity is an important and noble part of creation. Okay, let's skip down to, I won't go into the rest of it, let's skip down to the very last line where it says that the man and his wife were both naked, yet they felt no shame. Part of the lie of the sexual revolution was to say that there's no shame in any behavior, any sexual behavior. That's not what this passage says. This is the condition of the human person before sin entered the picture. And it's a recognition that there's nothing wrong with the body. There's nothing to be ashamed of that we have a body. We're all born naked. And that's just fine. There's no shame in being born naked or being a body. We clothe our bodies for right reason. We'll get into that tomorrow. As God himself made clothes for the man and the woman after they fell. But fundamentally, this passage recognizes the dignity of the body. That's why we can talk about a theology of the body. The body itself is a reflection of God in the world. It's very, very sad nowadays. And this is a strange kind of a perverse fruit of the sexual revolution. There is more rejection of the body now than ever. People reject their own bodies. They hate themselves. They hate their bodies. They think that they have to change their bodies. You know the psychological disorders. You know anorexia is a good example, anorexia nervosa. People, especially young women, they perceive their body as being too fat. They really think that. It's a kind of complex inner, a distorted self-image. And so they do not eat. Or they make themselves vomit because they have to lose weight and they end up starving themselves. Well, that's an extreme case, but it's a rejection of the body as it is. Or nowadays, there's this trend to surgically alter the body. Now, it's okay to use surgery to correct the body. That's what surgery is for, to correct deformities or illnesses, yes, that's what surgery is for. But to use surgery to change healthy organs, to remove or distort healthy organs of the body. Strange trend now. You have young women who think that they have to have their breasts removed in order to be themselves. Then they have women a little bit older, they think they have to have their breasts enhanced in order to be have their dignity. There's as if the body that they have is somehow not good. It's a denial of what is revealed here. The man and his wife were both naked, they felt no shame. They're perfectly at home in their bodies because that's how God made them. Now, we can't live like that in the current stage because we do have sin. We're deeply afflicted by sin, and we see our own bodies and the bodies of others through the distorted lens of sin. So I understand that, and that's what we have to work with. But it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with the body. There's something wrong with us, something wrong with our perception of the body. But the dignity of the human person is definitely related to the dignity of the body, and that's why one of the ways we can express love for people is to take care of their physical condition. Care for the sick, care for victims of injuries. That was supposed to be part of the lesson of the pandemic. Take care of the sick. Unfortunately, we pretty much isolated the sick, isolated ourselves as if that was the right answer. But anyway, let's just stick with these fundamental lessons from Genesis. It's not good for us to be alone because we're made for relationship. It's part of the gift of being a human being to be male and female and to be in relationships, men with women, women with men. That's the fundamental. And it's part of being a human person to have a body, and there's no shame in that. Now, let's respect our own body. Let's respect the bodies of every other person that we know, because this is how God made us. God made us, taught us to respect and to love one another.